Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
All right.
Hello and welcome to a What's Good for the Goose is Good for the Gander edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Long exploited is the realization that this is a flawed team. A team capable of great heights as well as great lows. A team that just needs to keep improving, but also a team that struggles with some of the lessons. We all agree with the diagnosis. It's the prognosis that gives us pause. Is this team one or two struggle wins away from turning the corner? Or does this team need to stew in its own missed opportunities during the offseason? Well, we're all about to find out. In the meantime, offense, go. So we started offense by talking about Bryce Young, right? I mean, we absolutely have to. He registered a historical night, breaking Scott Hunter's record, 52-year-old record for yardage thrown in a game. Interestingly enough, Scott Hunter was the honorary captain, so he was for the game, so he was on site, on premises to see his record broken. Interestingly enough, Scott Hunter, his record-setting performance came in a loss to Auburn. And Bryce Young's record-setting night, fortunately, it came in a win, but it was a game where the score was closer for longer. And so that kept the need for Alabama to keep the gas on the pedal. And that formula is what yields a 31-for-40 passing night, 559 yards, outstanding, and five touchdowns. So we've talked, you know, this is Bryce's first year as a starter. So we've talked about the number of best career performances he's had, as well as, you know, worst performances of his career. When you've played 10 games or 11 games, you're going to repeat those. But nonetheless, this statistically would have to be his best performance. There were a lot of things that Bryce did very, very well. Did you hear me say 559 yards passing and five touchdowns? There were a couple of things that he can work on. But on this night, Bryce Young demonstrated himself as a championship caliber quarterback, and he continues to make an assault on the Alabama and the SEC rankings in terms of quarterback performances. There was a nice article that sort of ran through some stat packages, the top 10 quarterbacks in the SEC for completion percentage, all the quarterback stats. And it was impressive to see Bryce on the list. Naturally, he was on there with Mac and Tua, but some of the other sort of call them legendary quarterbacks in the SEC, he was on that list too. And that was fun to look at. And it sort of takes you back, some of the names that were on the list. Nonetheless, it speaks very highly of the company that Bryce Young is keeping with his performance on the field. I would say, and we talk about Bryce being a reluctant runner, and most of the times that's a good thing. He doesn't just cut and run like a Jalen Hurts. not that we're mad at Jalen, but just as a point of on a continuum, he's the other end. Sometimes he holds the ball a little too much or a little too long, and we definitely saw that with he had a touchdown called back when he did run. It wasn't his fault. It was a questionable hold situation. Rice moved the chains a couple of times, but he was also he had a sack, and so he had a multiple sacks, but he was sacked once for 16 yards, and subsequently it was a third down play. We're trying to move the chains. Subsequently, on the fourth down, Alabama missed a field goal. It was a 47-yarder. Even if we had just gone down, even if we had just kicked the ball on third down, it would have been a 31-yarder, and likely we make that. And those are 3 points we get into the game where it's sort of a little bit of back and forth. We would have liked to have certainly had those points. And so there's a little bit, you know, writ large, when you step back, it's a little bit of bad bumped up against an incredible lot of good. And so we continue to just be incredibly impressed with Bryce's performance. A couple individual plays I want to talk to. And in particular, they sort of fall under Bryce's domain. These are passing plays. The 79-yard touchdown to Jamison, just a phenomenal play. Coincidentally, it was also a play that that Coach Saban broke down. Of course, he goes into so much detail, so much more detail. If you have a chance to spot that, you got to look at those. Those are sort of, for me, must-watches every week. But Saban talked about, you know, Jamison, what they're trying to counteract the defense, sort of the shell defense, if you will. And how do you catch the team? How do you catch the defense sort of maybe going in one direction while you split some coverage? And so it was a two high safety. One of the safeties in the corner over Jamo, he sort of ran an angle route, a post. And Bryce, we haven't seen Bryce do this a whole lot, where he unloads a deep pass really before the receiver has broken open. And Jamison's still splitting the two defenders when the ball is put in the air, and he reaches out and catches the ball just as he stepped, you know, 1.5 steps, you know, clear. So the ball certainly was thrown earlier. And so we've seen a reluctance in Bryce to really let her rip like that. And so the fact that he threw that ball up and literally in double coverage let J-Mo run under it, and then he caught it, and he was able to get the separation and clear for the touchdown. That was a phenomenal play to watch, to go back and look at it from different angles. If you haven't seen that play, or if you have it, go back and watch that again. There's just an artistry there. There's a thing of beauty there. And there are other teams that would look at that and say, how do you beat Alabama? If they can do that, just throw the ball under and throw the ball up and let this track star run through, split a double coverage, and just catch that 79-yard touchdown. How do you beat them? How do you beat them? Because no one took a misstep. It wasn't sort of a trick where you get them going one way and you throw back the other. He just split the coverage. The coverage was in good position. Just the ball was perfectly located. And if your opponent, and Georgia too, I would put Georgia in this boat, they should look at that and say, we can't defend that. Now, that means we got to get to the quarterback, or maybe when we see this one up, we just got to pass interfere, whatever it is. But you look at that and you say, if they dial that up and it connects, we can't stop it. And so that was just a phenomenal play to get to see. And it was good on Bryce as well as Jamison. There was another sort of scramble play where Bryce was able to find Christian Leary for a touchdown. Interesting that, you know, Leary had come in at a running back position. He had motioned out to the offense's left, and then he came back in motion, and then almost sort of went not a wheel route, but almost just, you know, go stand at the just beyond the line of scrimmage and just stand there and maybe get sort of lost in the transition, which exactly what happened. He was at the sideline, maybe 5 yards across the line of scrimmage, if that many, and just wasn't covered. And so Bryce is looking down the field, he wants to throw it into the end zone. I think Alabama's at the 11 or 12 at that point. And he turns and spots Christian Leary just standing there wide open. We talked about Leary moved to the running back position, but being a receiver, so we know he has dependable hands. And so Bryce let her rip. He was running towards the line of scrimmage, stopped, was able to get the ball off without crossing the line of scrimmage. It was an easy pitch and catch touchdown after all of the scramble and the motion and Leary sort of getting lost, if you will, in terms of coverage. So that was another just phenomenal play, and it really demonstrates Bryce Young's vision. Leary must have been his third or fourth option, maybe fifth option on that play, and including running. Definitely he could have run well before he threw that pass. Whether or not he would have scored had he run, it's an interesting question. But let's keep Bryce upright. And so I like the fact that he was able to find the open receiver for the touchdown there. Receivers, we definitely want to call out some individual receivers. We talked about Jameson. He had 8 carries for a 190. Just incredible. He did have a couple of drops, so he could have gone over the 200 mark. J-Mo had 3 touchdowns. Again, just an all-around outstanding day. Mechie had 10 catches for a 173. So it was a really good sort of breakout performance. I think three of the 4 last games, Mechie's broken the century mark. And here he goes for a 173. He also has a touchdown, which was really nice. And I want to call out, he's going to be called out a lot negatively, and I don't want to lean too heavily in that. But I want to call out Cameron Latu. He had 3 catches for 58 yards. Folks, that's phenomenal production from the tight end position. And Cameron is a dynamic weapon from the tight end possession position. He did have a catch and a run and almost a scrum, 3 or 4 guys trying to tackle him. He's trying to give the extra effort to try to get into the end zone. And he just has the ball taken away from him. It's a fumble. You don't want that to happen. You got to, you know, double wrap up the ball, both hands. And look, I know you're a big guy, and so I'm going to try to run through these DBs because, damn it. And sometimes you just got to know when to give up the ghost and just crumble to the knee, maintaining possession. That's always more important. Let's line up with possession. You know, play another play as opposed to giving it away. It's an instinctual thing that you just got to know. And of course, you think you're going to hold on to the ball. And again, you're a big old dude, you know, 6'4", 250. These little DBs kind of running up on you. I want to knock them on their rear end too, right? So I get that. But, you know, Cameron's going to learn from that. But still, I like the fact that he was involved in the passing game. He had 3 receptions, 58 yards. And that's a level of capability. It's a weapon that Alabama has that can help us, that can help the team sort of down the stretch as far as long as that stretch is, right? It's at least 3 games, right? There's at least 3 games left. And then, you know, obviously we're hoping for a 4th. All right. Because there's at least a bowl game. Even if Alabama doesn't make the playoffs, there is at least a bowl game. If we make the playoffs, then, you know, there's 2 rounds. We all know the math. All right, let's talk about the running back position. You know, you can't talk about the running back position without Brian Robinson this whole season, certainly with the injuries that have accrued at the position. 27 carries for a 122. It's only a 4.5-yard average, but hey, 4.5 is moving the chains. You're staying on schedule if you're averaging 4.5. So that's nice. He had a long of 15. That's not incredible. That's not outstanding. Last week, he had a 63-yarder, so we know that he can be explosive. I think that this is representative of the Arkansas linebackers. They're just phenomenal. They close on the run very well, and so Brian Robinson had a very workmanlike day, but again, 27 carries, a 122, 4.5 average. That's going to keep the chains moving, and a nice long of 15. He also had, in terms of just incorporating him into the offense in other ways, he had 3 catches for 18 yards. That was certainly nice to see. Trey Sanders saw a little bit of action, not a whole lot. He had 1 carry for 3 yards. I think we sort of ran him up the middle. Not a big fan of running Trey Sanders up the middle, especially with his injury, but I don't think that's his skill set. A couple of times I was calling for the toss sweep. Just run the toss sweep. I know that's more of an antiquated play. That's like a Stallings era staple. But I think situationally, getting to the edge, you want to get to the edge and you think my athlete could beat yours. I like the toss sweep in that regard. And Trey Sanders on the toss sweep, I think, might be something special to watch. Trey also had 1 catch. He had a nice adjustment to get open on a 36-yarder. So that was nice to see him incorporated different ways into the offense, too. I want to see more and more of that. I think Trey Sanders has the chance to be a special player at the running back position. I know he's still recovering, slowly progressing from his injury, but I want to see More and more Trey. Not mad at Brian. I love Brian, but want to see some Trey as well. Christian Leary, we've mentioned his play. He was in for a small handful of snaps, but he had no carries, but he did have that one catch for an 11-yard touchdown. So, again, that was nice. The offensive line, we have to talk about the offensive line. I think the big message that I want to send relative to the offensive line is that the line played with much less dysfunction. And so I'm not going to swing all the way back and say they were spectacular, because that's not true. But they weren't a dysfunctional bunch either. And so if you can go from a dysfunctional bunch to even, I'll take that, right? That's significant improvement. Now, if we can get a little better than even, then that's what we want too. But the fact that there was so much less dysfunction, there were a couple holding calls that may have been ticky-tack. I know Damian George did get beat first sack once. I hated to see that, because he's the guy that we're glad to see at that position. But relative to what we've gotten, I think this was a fine performance by the offensive line. We're grading the offensive line based on what we've seen them do this season, not last year's offensive line. That's not fair to anybody. We saw mentioned Damian George starting at right tackle, so that was nice to see. A question was answered when Darian Dalcourt, injured center, comes back. What happens to Chris Owens? Does he move back to the right tackle? Does he stay at center, or does Dalcourt? That's one of the questions. And with Javon Cohen having been injured last week, is there an opportunity that Owens would move over to left guard? And Saban sort of alluded this week in a press conference. He said, "Well, we feel like we have six starters now." And so I thought, okay, he's really extending an olive branch to Owens there and what we likely have. And that came at the tail end of a question on how well Damian George is playing. And of course, Damian George, I think, has been playing very, very well. And that almost felt like an olive branch extending to Chris Owens. And so, again, not mad at the kid, but I think I like this offensive line better than what we've had. It pains me that it took an injury 11 weeks into the season to get it. But nonetheless, here we have it. Damian George at the right tackle with Emil Ekior at the right guard, Darian Dalcourt at the center, Javon Cohen at the left guard, and of course, Evan Neal at the left tackle position. It's the first time we've seen this unit play together. We've seen the mixes and matches of all of these guys, but it's the first time we've seen these five guys play together as a unit. So, and it, at least start, we could go back and sort of break down film. What have we seen? But I think this is the first time we've seen this five together as a unit, and it not be something like an A day or, you know, a backup situation some year, even, you know, last year or the year before. So in meaningful starting game on the line situation, the first time we've seen this unit. Again, I hate that it's week 11 that we see some of these changes, especially since we've been calling for some of these changes since some of these updates since, you know, maybe week two. And so, you know, here we are. We should see. Now, we have a short runway for this. We should see some improvement with this line playing more together. And so, you know, we'll see how this next week goes. Hopefully, we start to see some gel across this unit versus the prior unit. A question I might ask, and I don't want to ask it, but is it too little too late? We'll just have to see in that regard. But we are seeing some of the changes across the offensive line that we've been calling for, it seems like, all season. So it's not, what's the expression, something about a gift horse in a mouth or something. But at any rate, mini game ball on offense. Ja'Cory Brooks, one of the young receivers that we're starting to really see emerge into a role, Christian Leary certainly being one of the others. We're calling out Ja'Cory Brooks for a block that he had, and it's really blocks plural. He tagged a couple of fellas when on one of Mechie's little screen plays. And so Mechie went for 25, 26, but he got the corner on a block, or again, blocks with Ja'Cory. He tied up a couple of guys and looked like he really popped one of them. It reminded me, looking at that film, going back and looking at that play, it reminded me of just a couple of years ago when Devonta and Judy and Ruggs, they would compete for blocking opportunities as much as they would for catches. And that was always fun to see sort of that spirit across the wide receivers. And so it's good to see. It was good to see Ja'Cory demonstrate that. That is the type of play. That's the kind of play that will get him more and greater opportunities at the wide receiver position. Let's flip the field and let's talk defense. And this defense, for my money, it's really operating in a little bit of a split personality. This is a defense that Saturday allowed 7 of 16 third down conversions, 3 of 3 fourth down conversions, allowed 468 yards and 35 points. Now, if we want to get real technical, we could say that, hey, one of the fourth down conversions and some of those yards and one of those touchdowns were really on the special teams and not on the defense. And I would agree with you. That's right. But just looking at the stats and the scoreboard sort of writ large, you know, we're splitting hairs if we're going to be pleased with the defense, you know, giving up 28 versus 35 and then, you know, still well over 400 yards. So and not getting off the field on third and fourth down. So I think I think the message holds, right? KJ Jefferson, I think, had his best day at quarterback. He's a very talented guy. He's progressing, and we could almost see him have sort of a spike day in terms of if you're tracking or plotting his performance. He threw for 326 yards, 3 touchdowns. Again, he's an incredibly talented quarterback. I think he's a sophomore for the Hogs, and so we're going to get to deal with him for a couple more seasons. And he showed that he's not intimidated by the Alabama uniform or the Tuscaloosa Bryant-Denny Stadium environment. Treylon Burks, their incredibly talented wide receiver. He's just an all-conference wide receiver. And if you're looking at the film or, you know, looking at especially live and you're saying, well, where's Treylon? Well, just look at the wide receivers and just look at the one that's an animal. I mean, he's taller than the rest of them. He's bigger than the rest of them. It looks like maybe he could be a defensive end. And he's out there playing wide receiver, just incredibly talented. Nonetheless, we gave up 179 yards to him and a pair of touchdowns. So when we think about split personality for the defense, there's a lot of stuff we're giving away. But this is also a defense that had Saturday as well. Had a turnover, averaged allowed a rushing average of 2.6 yards. That's on 46 attempts. And so that's a lot of possessions. That's a lot of plays that sort of grind to a low gain, a low or no gain, 42 attempts, averaging 2.6. You'd expect at some point they're gonna bust a fill, that the defense is gonna bust a fill, and the running back is gonna be able to find a lane. And it didn't happen. It didn't happen all day. Alabama defense had 3 sacks and 10 tackles for loss, and in key moments, you have to look for them. All right. But in key moments in the game, the defense really stepped up and rose to an occasion. And in the third quarter, there were two such instances where the defense forced punts. After the missed field goal and after Alabama's missed field goal, it was a 10-point game. Arkansas had the ball, and we had been trading scores pretty successfully, both sides. And a 10-point margin, they have a chance with possession to really eat into that lead. If they come get a field goal, make it a one-score game. If they come get a touchdown, it's a different complexion. But the defense holds, forces a punt, and then after the Latu fumble, now they had the full field ahead of them to drive, but Arkansas was moving the ball, and at that point it was a 6-point game. So. Late in the third quarter, Arkansas has possession with the opportunity to take a lead. And in both instances, the defense forces a punt. And so that's rising to the occasion. Now, we would like to see them play lights out like that all day long. But we at least get to see them rise up in a moment where there's an increased urgency. So if you can't have it all day, then let's pick our spots. And we would have chosen those two spots. So we'll take it. Again, a little bit of a split personality on defense. We got to get this stuff ironed out. I want to give 100% hats off to Arkansas. They were an out outmanned team. They were an outmatched opponent, but they come in ready to play hard under Sam Pittman. I give them an immense amount of respect. Their linebackers are incredibly talented, and they have talent on the other side of the ball as well. But I'm focused on Alabama, right? What do we, if we take care of our stuff, then it matters much less what the opponent does. But at the same time, hats off to Arkansas. But it's frustratingly so, where when we talk about the Alabama defense, the song really remains the same. There's more separation in the Alabama secondary than there is in a random Tuesday in divorce court. I don't know how we fix this. We plastered Tennessee, but you know, gave up three busts, and they scored on every one of those. Not too dissimilar with Arkansas, although not quite as stark as Tennessee, where you know Alabama plays a nickel most of the night, a little bit of dime, but a lot of man-to-man, and just a couple of times they get beat for big plays. There was a push-off on Burks's longest touchdown. It was on Josh Job, a little bit of push-off, which freed the receiver. But nonetheless, they're beating us, not just on that play, but other plays. They're beating us. They're getting the separation they need to continue to move the ball, to move the chains, and you know, obviously put up a lot of points as well. On Josh Job, he has been suffering lingering effects from a turf toe, and so after that play, he was replaced in the game. Is it because he got beat? Is it because of his toe, or is it just a convergence of circumstance there? And it's a little bit of one, a little bit of the other. I think that's probably the answer. But Kool-Aid McKinstry came in and fielded the position the rest of the way. I think Jess Nichols, I love reading his TideFans.com, his write-ups. I think that he said it best in what I saw today. He said McKinstry went in and you didn't hear his name called. And in the scheme of things, that's probably a good thing. But so I tend to agree with that. So he came in and played well. And again, that's another change. We've talked about some of these youngsters, getting them into the secondary. It's week 11. So it's frustrating that it's taken this long for some of this to happen, but McKinstry getting more and more of a role in the secondary, you know, George at the tackle position, getting more and more of an opportunity. And some of these young receivers, some of them pressed into action like Leary, but even a Ja'Cory Brooks, getting more and more of an opportunity. We're happy and pleased to see that. We hate that it took 11 weeks in for some of this to sort of manifest. And I know that's Saban's sort of frustration too, right? Because he knows these guys have it. Just you got to get ready faster to come in and play, because when the ball kicks, it's real. I want to talk about a couple of individual performances. A little bit down on the secondary, but there's still some quality individual performances. I want to say front, you know, seven. I guess if we're playing a lot of nickel and dime, then you know, it's more the front six. But Henry Toa had 13 tackles. That's a big number for him. Two sacks, three TFLs. So he was really, really active. My game plan for him would have been to spy the quarterback, and I think he did a little bit of that, not exclusively that, but he had a big day, really filling up his stat line. DeMarco Hellams had 11 tackles, so it's a secondary individual, certainly with some run-fill obligation. Hellams plays, we've talked about him, he plays better close to the box, sort of box in as opposed to box out. I think Hellams plays better in that regard, but he had a nice 11 tackles. Again, he puts up big numbers every week. If you go back and, you know, almost forget what you see on the field and you just look at his numbers, you're going to say he's one of the stars of the team. If you go back and look at the stats for this season, you know, back in the spring, you know, when spring comes, look at the stats back for this season, and you might be surprised that the numbers that Hellam put in, and then you might ask yourself, I don't remember him ever being like incredibly awesome. In fact, I more remember him for his frustrating plays. That's going to be true too, but dude is productive. Hellams is a productive player. Will Anderson, you know, the Will Anderson dispatch, right? And he rises to the occasion again. He too had 11 tackles. He had a sack, and there's a part of me, I'm fighting the urge to say he only had one sack because he's been putting them up in bunches, but he did have a sack. He had 3.5 tackles for loss. and he had two quarterback hurries. So he was just on the cusp of even more sacks. But Will Anderson just having a beast of a day, and absolutely we love to see that. And he's certainly a fan favorite. Tim Smith started for DJ Dale at the nose position. And as soon as we saw that at the game, wait a second, I don't remember seeing anything. I don't remember hearing anything about it. How does this, what happened here? And it turns out DJ looked like maybe tweaked his knee in pregame warmups. And Coach Saban said that DJ Dale has had a couple surgeries on his knee. And so something tweaked. And, you know, maybe scared him a little bit, maybe made him a little nervous. They went and did an MRI, and there was no damage that was visible, but they held him out on a precautionary, and I think that's the right answer. Tim Smith got the start, and his stat line wouldn't think it, but he certainly made a contribution there at the nose. And for that reason, defensive mini game ball goes to Tim Smith. I would just sort of one more thought on defense. We talked about sort of the split personality. This defense, the Alabama defense, is really at an inflection point, and the season really hangs in the balance. Is this defense going to be the defense that Alabama fans saw against Ole Miss, really stifling that high-powered offensive attack? Is this going to be the defense that really just shut down Mississippi State? Again, another team having a good season and prolific at putting up points. Is this going to be the defense against LSU where the offense didn't show up, but the defense really rose to the occasion, and where LSU had an opportunity late in the fourth quarter to take the lead or tie the game or even potentially take the lead, the defense rose to the occasion, really stepped up, and said, we're not having any of this. Is that the defense that we're going to see down sort of whatever the remaining stretch? Or is this going to be a defense that plays more like they did against Florida, giving up a bunch of points, against Texas A&M, giving up a bunch of points, essentially costing the game. And again, against Arkansas, giving up all of the yards and all of the points. This defense needs to choose, who are we going to be? Are we going to be a defense that sort of shuts things down so the offense doesn't have to bail our water? Or are we going to be just enough to be an obstacle for an opponent, but you know, not enough to be a difference maker in terms of winning the game? We know what we want the defense to do. I think it's up to some of the individual players, you know, to make that decision. Let's talk special teams. There's not a whole lot of good that I want to say about special teams. We allowed Alabama allowed a fake punt for a touchdown. Ugh, it's the same play, sort of run up the middle, a jump pass that LSU did. We had even schemed for it, and I think the more coach talked about it, talked about how we were prepared for it, I think the more sort of heartburn I got over the fact that we allowed it to happen. So we had schemed for it, and we were in a punt safe, and the story about, you know, Helms being screened by the official, that's all well and good, but I kind of call bull on that. If the official had not, and look, Helms ran all up on the official because it was a pick. They use the official. They know where the official stands. It's part of the play design. You got to be, that's part of the game. The official is part of the field. This is how this stuff works. But let's pretend for a moment that the official wasn't there. Helms wouldn't have prevented the play. The pass still would have been caught. Helms would not have prevented the first down. Now, the guy wouldn't have gotten free and run for the touchdown, but hey, on a fake punt, you're trying to prevent the conversion. What they add on to that, if they get sprinkles on their ice cream, you know, that's a whole nother thing. But we're trying to knock the ice cream out of their hand, right? And so I call BS on the official really having a significant impact on that play. I don't buy that we had it schemed up perfectly and that the official was the key to us not executing that play. I'm just not buying it. Because, again, had the official not been there, the conversion still would have taken place. They still would have moved the ball. They still would have been in good position to continue the drive and potentially score. The official didn't stop that from happening. Running into the official stopped the additional yards for the touchdown. And, look, I'd rather not that have not happened as well. But I would rather them not have converted. Wouldn't that be a nice play to pick that off or bat that down? Probably a better play to bat it down. You get the ball where they at the original line of scrimmage. But nonetheless, That's how you stop that. You want teams to stop running plays like that? Shit, don't bitch about the official being in the way. Go pick the thing off. Go knock it down. Go stop the conversion. And so I guess we'll probably get a chance to see that play again. And I'd like to see us play it better. Slade Bolden muffed a punt. He was able to get back on top of it, but I hate seeing that. If there's a freshman that's going to muff a punt, then, like, hey, let's get him reps to learn. But you got a junior out there. I was disappointed to see that. Will Reichert was 2 of 3 on field goals. We've talked about his miss. He should hit. Was that a 47-yarder? He should 46-yarder, whatever it was. He should hit that. But that is a long one nonetheless. And he was 4 of 4 at PAT, so that's good too. Alabama did have a 2-point conversion. Burnup had 1 point. This is my favorite stat line maybe of the game. Burnup had 1 punt for 32 yards. And I look at that, and I say, why is he punting? And then I remember situationally in that game, we were too far. We were too far to kick a field goal. And I thought we might actually go for it, but we elected to punt. And I thought, well, this is perfect. We're at the edge of his range. And so punt the hell out of this, and they'll get it inside the 5. And sure enough, now obviously I had to take a little bit off to get it to 32. And maybe he's so consistent and so accurate. And maybe I'm missing that. We talked about last week where he had he averaged 38, and he had a 37 and a 39. And so you knew what you're getting. You know what your floor is. And so maybe this was more accuracy than at the edge of his range. Maybe there's more good there than me being a jerk about it. But nonetheless, I found humor in it. And so 32-yard punt, I think they got the ball at the 3 or the 4, whatever it was. It was a good result. And good on Burnup for that. I'd like to see that Aussie leg just really get loose for some 40, 46, 48, 50-yard punts. But we haven't seen that yet. So maybe that's still in the arsenal. I don't know why. I don't know why we'd be holding it back. But maybe he eats his Wheaties one day, and we get to see that cut loose. There was an onsides kick that we defended, and I say defended quite generously. The ball sailed out of bounds, so there was really no play on the ball for us or them. But Will Anderson, man, just kudos to Will Anderson. He just clobbered Treylon Burks on that, and the ball went out of bounds behind him. He's blocking. His intent is to block, and so at the sideline, Treylon Burks, their big guy, big receiver, big hands, they want him up there to try to make a play on that ball. The ball, like I said, ball sailed, so no one had an opportunity. But that happened behind Will Anderson, and so he's going up there and saying, "You're not getting the ball. Someone else might, but you're not." And he knocked him in the next week on that play. And so that was, I think, he exorcised some of the frustrations that we all had at that point in the game, because that game should not be coming down to an onside kick where they can have possession of the drive down and tie end or win. So. Good on Will Anderson for letting us all kind of breathe and officially sort of ending the game at that point. All right, next up. Well, it's that time of year, right? We have Auburn at their place this year. Auburn's coming off an embarrassing loss to South Carolina. They have a number of players out, including their quarterback, Bo Nix. And so having all of those players out, this is the first game that they've played where they're trying to replace those players. And so what that means is they've gotten they'll flush their pipes of all the bad stuff, and they'll come out next week and all look like world beaters, because that's how they do it, sort of down on the plains, I guess. Something about Jordan Hare, just the antics there. But that's something that Tide fans are, you know it's coming. And certainly something we need the team to be well aware of and prep for as well. What we want is to get out of, obviously we want the win. And I do think Alabama sort of outlasts Auburn in this game. We want to get in and get out. We want injury free. And so if it's a lower score, ugly kind of game, just like the Arkansas game, we'll take it just for the sake of getting in and out. And like I said, injury free. If this game could go 2 hours and 45 minutes and TV's like looking for how to fill, then that I'm gonna be a happy person, because we just want this game over with. I do think, like I said, I do think the Tide has the ability to be a little more explosive, and then certainly the ability to sort of outlast the Tigers. So that's what I am counting on, absent the Jordan Hare sort of antics we talked about. 35-13 is something I would look forward to. And we may not even get some of that separation until later in the game. If it's 7-7 or 10-7 or 13-10 or something at midway through the second quarter, maybe even going in the half, that would not surprise me. I would hate it, but it wouldn't surprise me. But I could see late in the third, Alabama sort of asserting themselves and stepping away. So that's sort of a prediction there. We did have predictions on the game in our Zoom call, and I guess I have to give I don't want to give anyone the winner of this, because you know even the score I'm going to give is not what we saw on the field. But I think the closest sort of representative score is Travis. He picked 35-20, and I even remember when he said that, thinking like, oh wow, there was a response to his number. So 35-20 is I guess about as close as we got there. I want to give a shout out to Clint. He was sort of our de facto contest winner later in the season. We did the contest. So many people are sort of outside of a concentric circle that they can drive to Tuscaloosa. So we were very limited in our opportunity to have a winner. But Clint, we kind of thread the needle, was coming through Tuscaloosa on his way to Huntsville for Thanksgiving. And so the timing just worked out. And so we went to the game, had a phenomenal time, and putting together grand plans to get some more listeners in town for a game next year. And so we invite everyone that has an interest there to reach out, let us know, and we'll see what we can get hooked up. Should be a lot of fun if Saturday was an indication. So with that, one more thing. Thank you, all of you, for listening, for downloading, for supporting. Oh, I can't tell you how much we appreciate it. We really, really do. You got to get on some of these Zoom calls so you can like have an authentic conversation, and like just like we're so grateful and thankful for all of our listeners. And so, and that's true of that's true all the time. But, you know, as we're entering this Thanksgiving season, I just want to say from sort of the podcast family, I guess, which is me and Brian, I want to say that we thank you for all that you do in supporting the show, listening to the show, reaching out to us. You know, we've got a group on the Zoom, and I encourage everyone to at least try that. It's not a group of listeners. It's a group of friends. And we want to grow that group, you know, as large as we can, because holy cow, it's so much fun. At any rate, I hope that everyone for Thanksgiving is going to have an opportunity to spend with family and friends and loved ones, that all the travels are safe. And then we'll come out of we'll sort of cap the weekend as we're all sitting eating turkey leftovers and stuffing leftovers and pumpkin pie leftovers. And we're going to sit down and watch Alabama clobber some Tigers. So that's the game plan there. But again, thank you, and roll tide. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.